Morning brings dawn, and dawn a new day. But what if this day was different? What if this day you could see beyond the surface of reality to the essence of creation? Well, come along on a journey to a place where the sun doesn't rise or set, where what you choose is what you get. It's a place that's all around you, but you haven't seen it yet. This is How the Universe Works with Michael Galileo.
And good evening, and welcome once again to How the Universe Works with Michael Galileo. And I am your host, Michael Galileo. Once again, happy to be here to talk to you folks about how the universe works. And as Henry Miller says, the world is not to be put in order. The world is in order. It is for us to put ourselves in unison with that order. So that's what we're here for, to talk about how it works so it becomes easier to get in order with. And tonight we're going to talk about what a big universe it is. You know, it's small, but it's big. And, you know, depending upon where you're looking at it from. And that's what we're going to be talking about. The last couple of weeks we concentrated on the evolution of intelligence and the evolution of humans up from mammals and the dual hemisphere brain and our perceptions and, you know, all very human-centered view of the universe. And today, tonight, what I wanted to do is I wanted to look at the scientific bigness of the universe. I was looking at an article that was posted online, and it's been called Science Tuesdays a while back, and there was an article posted about the universe still boggling the minds of finite creatures, so by this fellow by the name of Robert Roy Britt, and I wanted to read that this evening. Because we want to look at it not just from the universe, not just from our egocentric viewpoint of the world around us and why we're here and what we're doing here and all that, because, you know, that's just one point of view. That's looking at the universe from the middle, from where we are, looking outwards and inwards. Now we want to take a look at it from a little bit bigger perspective. So we're going to do that, and we're going to have a musical message later on from Sam Phillips again. She'll make a return with a song we haven't done before. And basically just talk about, you know, how the universe works. I had the opportunity, again, I mentioned last week that I was going to be speaking to the group of preschool, pre-kindergarten children at a local school about all of this and where time comes from. And I got to do that for a second time last Wednesday. And again, it was wonderful. It's great to see those young minds so open to possibility, grasping concepts like how big a second is. And it's so much fun because while I'm sitting there speaking to the students, the teachers are listening to all of this, and of course they expressed to me after it's all over that they've never heard it before. So we're not just enlightening the children, we're enlightening the teachers. And you know, again, once you see time that way within our universe, it kind of helps. It helps with like a longitude, so we can quantify where it is that we've been and where it is that we're going, and try to help us attain our goals. So and we talk about it all here on all different levels, whether you're 4 years old or 40 or older. So, and again, tonight what I want to do is read a little bit about what Robert Roy Britt had to say. And I'll take it from the top of his article. And if I find any point there that I think it's worthwhile to pose it an opinion or a viewpoint about something that he's saying, I'm going to do that. So, but we're going to talk about our universe. And it starts out by saying there may be nothing more mind-boggling than the universe. And of course, that's what it can be, right? But that's what we're here for. We we can make a lot of sense of it. It says, imagine we're halfway through the year in the heart of the information age, nearly 400 years after the telescope was invented, and we don't yet know how big the house is, nor what, if anything, lies beyond. As much as we have progressed in science, we are still finite creatures with limited conceptual abilities and imperfect observational tools, said James Schweitzer, Director of Astrophysics Education at the American Museum of Natural History's Rose Center for Earth and Space. Humbling thought, but add one thing. We are highly curious creatures prone to speculation. That in mind, we wanted to at least pose the questions that we suspect swirl through the minds of all who have ever been curious, who have ever looked up on a dark night and simply wondered, how old is the universe? Does it have an edge? And come on, truthfully, how could it all have begun in some big bang that originated in a small spot, smaller than the dots under all these question marks? For answers, we pestered Schweitzer and Mario Livio, head of the science division at the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore. What a cosmic can of worms. Turns out even the word universe is elusive, having three meanings, two of which depend on whether or not you hit the shift key. So we start with the basic. What does the word universe mean? The observable universe, Schweitzer explained, is the one astrophysicists generally talk about because it's the one open to empirical measurement. In fact, it's the only one we can or ever will be able to talk about with any certainty. He goes on to explain that universe, sans the word observable, is a larger concept than scientists think, conforms to our laws of physics and all the assumptions that go with them. Comprehending this universe, Schweitzer said, requires a leap of faith into unobservable realms. Finally, there is the universe, which, by virtue of its capital U, includes absolutely everything, even possibilities of dimensions, modes and regions that obey laws of physics we don't know or maybe even can't know. Okay, then, if we can't know it, let's move on to the next question. How did the universe begin? There is a very simple answer to this question. We don't know, and we may never know. The leading theory for the formation of our universe is the Big Bang, of course. According to this theory, all the matter and energy in our present observable universe was compressed into a very small area before, in a nanosecond, it exploded outward and expanded continually until the present time, and will perhaps do so forever. Unimaginable as it might seem, the Big Bang theory is tame compared to some recently emerging wilder ideas, speculations that pop up like parallel universes in a vacuum of understanding. Some cosmologists say our observable universe is one of many that spring forth continually from a series of bubbles. In this scenario, one Big Bang begets another. Another recently proposed scenario holds that instead of springing forth in a violent instant from a teensy point in space, our universe was created when two parallel membranes collided. These brains, B-R-A-N-E-S, as theorists call them, would have floated like sheets of paper through a fifth dimension until slamming together and generating energy and heat that led to the same expansion described by traditional Big Bang theory. This ecliptic universe theory, as it is called, does not replace Big Bang theory. Instead, it offers an alternative way that the currently observed expansion might have been jump-started. Again, we're talking about the beginning. What we talk about here on the show is everything that happened from that point forward. But we'll continue. In any case, the Big Bang theory does not actually explain how the universe began. It assumes that space, time, and energy already existed. Except that rather significant caveat, and one can then discuss the leading theory for how our present observable universe came into being. It started from an extraordinarily dense and hot state, and it has been expanding ever since, said Livio of the Space Telescope Science Institute, giving perhaps the world's most concise definition of the Big Bang model. But there's more to point out here, including the fact that dense is rather an understatement. Everything that exists now, at least in the observable universe, was once all packed into a sphere 1/1,000,000th of a meter across, Schweitzer said. Translation, too small to see. That may seem pretty small, but it's only because of our human perspective, Schweitzer assured us. adding that today's universe is extraordinarily empty. Imagine, as an example, that the area of our solar system with 9 planets packed into a region less than 9 billion miles across is relatively crowded compared to the vast empty stretches between stars where nothing but a few molecules hang out. So there's lots of room to compact what we already see, Schweitzer said. But there was a trade-off for all this miniaturization, like a car that's cheap to run but cramped to sit in. In the case of the universe, it was heat. Mighty hot, as Schweitzer put it, as in 10 degrees with 32 zeros after it. Over time, the universe expanded, cooling as it did so. This expansion was discovered in the 1920s when Edwin Hubble found that every galaxy he looked at in any direction was racing away from us. In fact, the Big Bang was initially suggested to explain this expansion. Early on, things were smooth, real smooth. But the expansion had a ripple effect of major importance, triggering lumps and bumps in the otherwise uniform fabric of space, which led to the birth of the first galaxies. The Big Bang theory long ago predicted that an after effect of these ripples should exist today throughout the universe in a faint glow of radiation called cosmic microwave background radiation. This was confirmed in 1964. How old is the observable universe? While some of the smartest scientists in the world have been working for decades to pin down an age for the universe, it's still an elusive number and subject to hearty disagreement. The most commonly cited estimates are between 12 billion and 15 billion years. Estimates come by finding distant sources of light. A star or galaxy 10 billion light years away is 10 billion years old. But the estimates also depend on the rate at which the observable universe is expanding, which in turn is related to its exact composition and evolution. And evidence presented in the past couple of years tells us the pace of expansion is actually accelerating. This unexpected discovery has only served to further confuse things because no one can figure out what is causing this acceleration. Researchers speculate that it might be the result of some strange and unknown matter or energy whose force or gravity repels rather than attracts over long distances. All the confusion aside, Schweitzer, like any good scientist, has his own estimates of the age of the universe. It's about 13 billion light years from where we are to the observable universe isotropic boundary, which is seen as the cosmic microwave background radiation. As researchers push telescopic power to new limits, they have begun to see objects back to when the universe was just 2 billion years old or so. But they will likely never see the beginning. When we look in electromagnetic radiation, like light, we can only see the universe to the time when it was about 300,000 years old. Because the universe was opaque to such radiation before that, Livio said. So the universe is expanding, and it's been doing so for billions of years. And we can't see the beginning of it. All of which begs the next question. Is the universe finite or infinite? The observable universe is finite, Schweitzer said, which is to say that it had boundaries, physical limits. Sort of. It's a boundary to the events we can see directly, but not a boundary in the sense that New York State has a boundary. And in an expanding universe, this boundary is constantly moving, as is everything within it. Cosmologists typically invoke a balloon with spots on its surface representing galaxies to explain the expanding universe. As the balloon is inflated, the spots grow further apart. If you stood within one of these spots, you'd see all the others moving away from you, and the most distant spots would appear to move the fastest. Schweitzer goes on to say that the observable universe is probably part of a much larger universe, which could be finite or infinite. Any global statements about the universe, such as overall extent, are speculative because they require extrapolating local mathematic theories and measurements beyond the observable universe. So if the observable universe is finite, like the space occupied by a car or a house is finite, then there must be a brick wall or something up there holding it all together, right? Does the observable universe have an edge? No, said Livio. First you guys tell us the universe is expanding, then you say it's finite. Now you say it has no edge. We need a visual here. Livio is up to the task. He dredges up the old expanding balloon as his prop. An ant traveling on the surface of a balloon will never reach an edge, Livio explains. In the worst case, it will return to its starting point. And so, too, do we return. It is now a few moments later in the same year, part of the same information age, well after the telescope was invented, and we still don't know how big the house is, nor what, if anything, lies beyond. But now, perhaps we understand, but we don't know a little better. Well, you know, we can take a lot out of that, though, and we can extrapolate a lot, and we can say a lot about what that information tells us. And a lot of it jives wonderfully with everything we've been talking about here, because for the last 3 months or so, we've been talking about the fact that the universe that we live in is a closed system, that it has edges, which, as this article stated, it has boundaries. So we can use the word edges for boundaries. And it has a basic size and shape that continues to fluctuate. Everything is constantly moving and changing because the universe is electromagnetic in nature. Everything is constantly moving and changing from what it is to what it must become, because since the first moment of this universe, whether it was 12 billion years ago or 15 billion years ago, doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is, from that first moment forward, each moment has become the next, based upon the electromagnetic current causing everything to constantly attract and repel within this observable universe to become what it has to, become what it must. And that's the world that we live in. It's a world that changes constantly, that moves from what it is to what it is becoming, and because of its size and because of how unobservable so much of the universe is to we humans, we can become confused when we become born into a constantly evolving universe that has been going on for, you know, 12 or 13 or 15 billion years, and we're born into it at the point that we are, and everything has evolved from what it was in the beginning to what it is now, and it's nothing now like it was in the beginning. And we're born into it with our humanness and our objective points of view, and we become confused by it all. So what we try to do here is try to scale this to the point where that constant moving and changing energy that causes planets and galaxies and things like that to continually evolve is also the power that constantly causes our individual realities to continuously align from what they are to what they must become based upon our choices. You know, and that's the part that I can even teach to the four-year-olds, is that with all of this cosmic greatness going on around us, with all this continually expanding and growing energy that's constantly causing everything around us to realign, that we have the power, because of our intelligence and self-awareness, to choose this reality to be any way that we like it to be, really. And that's really what we're doing every day. And the world that we're in and the world that we're choosing is becoming as we choose it to, based upon the circumstances and conditions around us and how those circumstances and conditions cause us to see the world as it's evolving. So very interesting stuff when you can take the cosmic space information from so many different points of view, you know, and stuff that's been boggling minds for centuries and eons and generations, and now finally we're able to look at it pretty much from one edge to the other. And yes, that article indicates that that there are still a lot of things that we are not aware of, that we don't really know for sure. But we sure see a whole heck of a lot more now than we ever did before. And one thing that we can see everywhere all the time is the math formula that's causing everything to be the way it is. The Fibonacci recurrent series of whole numbers, that UN equals UN minus 1 plus UN minus 2. And no matter what you apply that to, that formula, no matter what, whether it's a person, place, or a thing, or a universe, or an idea, or whatever it is, you'll see that everything in this universe is evolving based upon that mathematic formula. And because that formula causes each moment and each thing to continually add up as it grows, it's certainly not surprising that the universe is continuing to expand. When you think about it, the universe is a living thing, just like every other thing within the universe, because it's powered by the same electromagnetic current. I mean, everything within the universe is really what makes up the universe, just like atoms making up matter. It's like they stated in that in the article, everything was compressed. Everything that exists here now was here in potential. And I think that that's important to understand. I think that's part of the problem with the density concept is that people would think that, well, okay, well, all of this material and all of this matter had to be compressed into one small little iota. When it's not really, that's not really the case. That would be like saying that you would have to take all the trees in the forest, how can I say this? And at their beginning, when they were, if the trees in the forest have been growing for thousands of years, they've obviously grown from what they were when they first started because of the electromagnetic current and the circumstances and conditions causing them to grow. And so the universe is the same way. It doesn't mean that all the trees, all the wood, all the leaves, all the bark, all the roots all existed before the tree did, but certainly the potential and the blueprint existed, and it just required the electrical current, the power, to make it continually grow so that eventually it became much greater in mass than it was originally. But it still all came, more or less, from the beginning of the forest. So if you can kind of equate that to understanding the beginning of the potential of all the items in the universe, you know, that's kind of the way you have to look at it. Again, understanding that it's electromagnetic, that like something being held in memory, as memory continues to grow because it's held together in memory, it's there as long as the electrical current causes it to be that way. But as soon as the electrical current is eliminated, then of course the electromagnetic bond is broken, and then the thing would disintegrate. And that's the same thing that operates our universe. Just like the concept of a black hole evolving out of what was once a power source, and the power source eventually running out of juice, and because it's no longer generating the amount of electrical current that it had been to cause all the things around it to accumulate through the electromagnetic current, that once it stops generating that power, that it becomes a void, and that things seem to go into that void because if it's a lesser value. So that's, you know, that's kind of where the universe came from. It's being born in many ways and dying many ways, continually over and over again as each one of the power sources come and go. So, and we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. We're going to take a little break right now. Listen to some commercial messages, and we'll come back with a musical message from Sam Phillips. And then we'll talk about some of the power sources of this universe that cause everything to constantly align, attract and repel, and become our reality. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. I'll see you on the other side of the break.
A wise man once said, "The world is not to be put in order. The world is in order. It is for us to put ourselves in unison with this order." Most would agree that's easier said than done. Well, getting in line with the universe is about to get a whole lot easier. Join host Michael Galileo Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and become empowered by the knowledge of how our universe works from one edge to the other. You didn't know there are edges? How about where time comes from? No? Wow. See? You do need this show. How the Universe Works with Michael Galileo, here on Contact Talk Radio.
Join Michael Galileo every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for more information, check out his website at GalileoRealTime.com.
The Buddha and all his successors talk about intellectual structures that confine us to an artificial environment and against concepts that smear over the living fact of things as themselves. So said Robert Aitken, a Zen Buddhist master. Now, with the real-time earth clock, you can pull back the veil of illusion that's helping to cloud truth in your environment. Traditional clocks unknowingly confuse our world with artificial interpretations of time, even going in the opposite direction from which time occurs. The real-time earth clock shows time as it actually happens, and in the process shows us the flow of life on planet Earth. The ultimate feng shui device, it's a totally natural way of looking at time. Want to see a bigger picture? Visit GalileoRealTime.com and click on Clocks. The Real-Time Earth Clock. It's time for a new perspective.
I left my conscience like a crying child. Locked the doors behind me, put the pain on fire. Broken like a window, I see my blindness now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah, and here we are in this big old universe, observable or non-observable, expanding or non-expanding, finite or not finite. One thing we know is we do need love, so that's what it's all about. And, you know, if you go to my website, GalileoRealTime.com, which I don't mention enough, but if you go to the website and you go to the link section of the website and you go to an area called Powers of Ten, Quarks to Quasars, you'll actually be able to take a visual trip that shows the observable universe that we were just discussing from one edge to the other. And one of the more interesting ways of doing it, I used to do it in my mind long before I had the ability to go on the internet and see a visual representation of it. I used to do it through an imagination, a visualization, an astral projection type of moving my perspective around, and go to that edge of the universe. Take yourself, you know, all the way to the outer edge. You can do this in your mind if you have the creative imagination to be able to do it. If not, you can go to the website, you can go to the link, and you can do this visually. But it's a lot more fun with your eyes closed and doing it in your mind, and take yourself on a journey and go all the way to that outer edge of the universe, 13 billion, 14 billion, 15 billion light years from where we are here at planet Earth, on our spot on the edge of the balloon. And go all the way out there and start to travel through the vastness, the darkness, the openness of space from the outer edge, and start traveling towards the Earth. Travel through all that vacant, darkness and space with very few items, like they said, a few atoms floating around. And get closer and closer through galaxies and solar systems, and go past all that debris and rock and things floating around and exploding, and come closer to our solar system and our sun and our little planet flying around there, and get close with our planet, and as it, you know, it gets larger and larger, and you start to see its colors, and it's blue, and you go all the way in down onto the planet, and you know, it's just a rock floating around the sun over and over again. In the middle of all of that, cosmic soup over and over again, just going around and around, you know. And with all of that, we really do need love, you know. And a real God, not a political church, you know, and a fire to melt that frozen sea inside us because of the confusion it causes us, and so much pain in the middle of all this. It doesn't really have to be there. So, because the universe gives us the power, the universe gives us new moments, it gives us constantly changing circumstances and situations. And it has also given us self-awareness, and those two things together create the ability for us to have hope. And through hope, we can then bring about changes through our choices that cause the world around us to become more the way we want it to be. So, you know, that's how it all ties together. That's how you can go from perceivable universes to love all in one all in one fell swoop. So, to continue on the science end of things, we want to talk about ultrasound for stars, because once we realize that those, the power that generates, that causes everything in this universe to work, comes from a couple of sources. It comes from the cosmic microwave background, which we just talked about in that article. And it also comes from the quasars. And quasars are power sources that are, so, you know, they say that they're 10 trillion times as powerful as a regular star, which is what our sun is. And, you know, we know that our sun, the star that it is powerful enough to run and control pretty much the dynamic within our solar system. So it's all of that constant power, that constant energy that's coming from those sources that causes things to ionize. That's an interesting word, because it ionizes, causes an imbalance, and that imbalance causes a polarity, and that polarity causes attracting and repelling, and that attracting and repelling is what causes matter to form and gravity to exist and time to happen. None of that would be going on if it was not for the dynamic that causes each moment within this universe to become the next. And that's really just a changing state of matter. As it moves from one state to the next state, we monitor that and we call that time. But it's really not time. Just like attraction is really not gravity. Because you couldn't separate gravity from time when it comes right down to it. But we have, because we see things as separate. We don't see the world around us as just constant moving, changing energy because of our dual hemisphere brain and our duality and our contrast and our depth of field that causes us to see things as objects. We see things as a snapshot as opposed to seeing the continuum. That's part of what causes our confusion. But getting back to the power sources, there's a little article here about that, about this telescope called Ultrasound for Stars. It says, a telescope that works like ultrasound for stars has found a hatchery filled with massive stellar embryos in a dark cloud of cosmic dust, astronomers reported on Wednesday, on that particular Wednesday. Looking at the universe by tracking infrared radiation, the Spitzer Space Telescope has found a glowing incubator for developing stars in a bright cloud called the Trifid Nebula. The embryos are invisible to optical telescopes because they are hidden deep in the cloud, but the Spitzer's infrared instruments can see through the dust. To a regular telescope, the Trifid Nebula looks like a dark, wispy mist in front of a patch of brilliant lights. It is about 5,400 light years away in the constellation Sagittarius. A light year is about 6 trillion miles, the distance light travels in a year. In this same area, there is evidence of four clots of dark dust, known as cores, that are characteristic of places where stars form. Astronomers previously believed these dark areas were not yet ripe for star formation. But Spitzer's infrared observations showed massive stars taking shape there. With Spitzer, it's like we have ultrasound for stars, said Zhonghe Ro, an astronomer at the California Institute of Technology, who headed on this investigation. Stellar embryos develop so quickly in these dark regions that it is difficult to catch them before they become full-fledged stars, Ro said. At a meeting of the American Astronomical Society. Spitzer found 30 massive stellar embryos and 120 smaller newborn stars in the Trifid Nebula. Only 10 of the embryos were detected in the dark cores. The rest were scattered through the nebula's dusty lanes and bright clouds. Eventually, the embryos will accumulate enough gas and dust to ignite and explode out of their cores, the astronomers said. And there is more information and images available online at spitzer.caltech.edu. So, you know, there you have it. The universe is taking care of its continued expansion. It's taking care of creating the birthing elements for new solar systems. I mean, when you think about that, you think that since our solar system is only, 4 billion years old, and they're saying that the universe is 15 billion years old, that means for billions of years, you know, this universe didn't exist, this solar system didn't exist, but then at some point, the star that is our sun was born, probably in a place just like this, if not this place itself, and then somehow travels from place to place. I don't know how they move from, you know, where they're being born in their incubators to go off and assume their responsibilities with their own areas, their own regions, and then because of their power and their energy, cause whatever matter and material is in the area to ionize and polarize and attract and repel, and therefore become a solar system with planets like ours that then can support potential life, carbon-based and otherwise. You know, we happen to be pretty prejudiced. If it's not carbon-based, if it doesn't look like us in some way, shape, or form, living and breathing as we experience it ourselves, we don't really see things as having life forms, or you know, as being alive. But actually, they are. Everything is, including the universe. I mean, it's growing. You know, it's growing from what it was to what it is, and it's continuing on as long as the electrical current continues to be generated. And the matter affected by that continues to grow. It's just going to go on and on and on and continue to change from moment to moment to become what it has to become. So, you know, that's what's going on here, and that's what we're talking about. Now, it gets confusing, like I said. So, you know, I want to go into a piece here. I think we'll probably finish up with this. I'll get most of this out about how it can be confusing to us human beings and why it's confusing. Because we do see it as objects. We don't see it as moving, changing energy. And that's, you know, that's really what the point is of the show. If there's anything, you know, the show is called How the Universe Works. And, well, the one way the universe works is it's dynamic. It is not static. In other words, everything, everywhere, is constantly moving and changing. Even if it looks to you like it's standing still, it is not. It is the electrical energy within its molecular construct is constantly changing as the electrons are moving around, so it is never in the same state that it once was. Constantly moving and changing, even if it looks to us as if it isn't changing, because we're moving and changing at the same rate of speed. So, you know, that's the problem. We can't see it because we're moving at the same, we're vibrating at the same same speed, and I wrote a piece called Evolution versus Creation, What's the Difference? And it goes, you know, I'll read a little bit of it here to try to give a little clarification of what I'm talking about. It says, the truth is that everything in this universe is evolving at the same rate and speed, including us. So it's virtually impossible for the average living human to notice that it's occurring, because we are occurring at the same rate and in the same way. Like that other guy named Galileo, who struggled to demonstrate to contemporaries and authority at the time that the Earth was moving and not the Sun, I'm having the same circumstance trying to get others to realize that you can't tell that we're evolving because everything around us is evolving at the same rate. Just as sunrise and sunset are both illusions, so are time and gravity. To understand what I mean, one must take a larger view of the concept of evolution, which really should be considered as the change of any entity, whether natural or subjective, from one state to another. Ideas evolve, as well as plants and animals. Ideas can evolve from envisioned possibility into reality, into obsolescence and obscurity. A soda bottle evolves from initial chemical components which are used to produce plastic or glass into an actual container whose existence evolves to the point of being a full bottle of liquid. Then its existence evolves through natural forces of various types to a state of emptiness. Eventually, the empty bottle will be discarded and it will evolve into various components over time, which will redistribute themselves and amongst all the other elements and entities in the universe, and then be absorbed or evolved into subsequent states of being to the constant evolution of all things in this universe. a soda bottle goes for the same thing that a solar system does from beginning to end. The problem that my namesake Galileo Galilei had in his attempts to prove the Earth was moving was trying to get people to comprehend that they couldn't tell that the Earth was moving because they were moving along with it. In science, this dilemma can be referred to as the equivalency principle, whereby an object in motion cannot tell whether it is moving in one direction or the other without a fixed point of reference, because the force of acceleration is equal to the force of gravity. In an elevator, the body can't tell if it's going up or down without an objective viewpoint, so it is true with the force of evolution. Picture, if you will, putting people that have never experienced a train ride on two separate trains in two groups. One of the trains has its windows blacked out, so none of the passengers on board can see anything outside of their own train car. The other train has 360-degree panoramic views for all its passengers to see everything around. As the trains begin to move, passengers on both trains are startled, having never had the environment that they're in begin to move in its entirety. The people with the panoramic views begin immediately to see what's happening. As the train moves and picks up speed, they can see things moving by as the train moves forward and speeds up. At first, the motions caused by the train's movement around turns and when slowing down or speeding up causes a feeling of concern. But passengers with the panoramic view are easily calmed, as they can see the reasons for the effect of force that they feel inside the moving train car. Eventually, after paying attention for a while, they can even begin to anticipate from track curvature and the appearance of scheduled stops when and how the upcoming circumstances are going to affect the gravitational forces within their train car, and then they can actually prepare themselves for the upcoming and predictable shifts in speed and direction, and can take action to moderate the effects on their own person. Eventually, some get so good at it that they are able to move freely around the train car because they can see what's coming, and like a sailor with good sea legs, they can still manage to move around effectively and efficiently inside the moving train car with increasing confidence and exactitude, even using the predictable upcoming forces to aid the movement, hence exerting less effort for better results. Go now to the other train with the blacked out windows and sentient beings with no idea of what a train ride is all about. As the train moves, the people are startled, since they can't see anything outside, and since they're unfamiliar with the concept of forward movement of an entire environment, they assume that something must be jerking the reality around hither and thither. As the train continues to move and the passengers struggle against the unseen forces in the dark, they find it virtually impossible to draw any connection to what is occurring to them, and obviously someone that they can't see must be causing this to happen willy-nilly. Because they are unable to make the connection of direction and motion, because they don't have a fixed reference point like the passing landscape, which is available for view by the passengers on the first train, they're completely at the mercy of the forces that they are subjected to, and without any real clue as to why things are happening. To them, walking around inside the train with no idea of the forces at work nor indication of patterns which could help them control and use this motion to their advantage. It's a struggle, and their attentions are often derailed as a result of unforeseen but certainly foreseeable and ascertainable circumstances. You know, and that's what's going on. When we're born into the middle of it, and we're born with our human brains, and we see the world around us as objects, we don't see things moving and changing, it can take us a long time to catch on, you know? So, we try to have the show here, and we try to talk about that time on planet Earth happens at 18 and a half miles a second. That's how fast it's going. And it never changes. It doesn't go faster. It doesn't go slower. It's constantly evolving. And that's why as we sow, shall we reap. And that's why people have the power. And that's the secret that everybody's looking for and that people are writing about. It's funny. You see it in the books. And it's all around us, everywhere, all the time. So, you know, we're coming to the end of another show, and I don't know whether I spread some light for you or I spread more confusion, but, you know, you can always visit the website, GalileoRealTime.com. You'll find some poetry, which I will be publishing a book coming up real soon of poetry. You'll be able to purchase, give as gifts and, to friends, and keep for yourself. So check out the website, www.GalileoRealTime.com. send me an email if you have any questions. Otherwise, I'll be back next week, and we'll talk more about how the universe works from beginning to end. So we're gonna head out with a musical message from Sam Phillips. He's going to talk about how we need love, and we need to hear that because that's really the truth in this big old universe that we're in. But, you know, we're here to tell you how it works, and I'm hoping that that you're finding some clarity from all of this. So thank you again for listening, and we're going to play the Sam Phillips song, and I'm going to see you all next week. So take care. I'll see you then.
My conscience like a crying child, lock the doors behind me, put the pain on fire. Broken like a window, I see my blindness now, and I need love, not some sentimental prison.
Been listening to How the Universe Works with Michael Galileo. If you have a question about anything that has been discussed on this show, feel free to drop us a line at contacttalkradio.com or visit www.galileorealtime.com. The views expressed by host Michael Galileo may not be that of this station, but they are certainly correct.